2 weeks ago, we returned from one of the most undoubtedly considered to be the best mission trip yet. And that's kind of a lofty statement, but I stand firmly behind it. I'm not sure if I could really place any one aspect of this trip over the other. I'm going to sit here and try to describe as much of it as possible to you. First thing I would like to address is the land. So much of the land around Abiquiu and northern New Mexico, where we were staying at Ghost Ranch, the ranch we were staying at, it's so raw and colorful and unadulterated. The drive between Santa Fe and Ghost Ranch has more colors of red in the rock than I've ever seen in my entire life. Incredibly beautiful. These rocks, they stretch up in otherworldly formations to a vast blue sky. And in the sunset, this blue sky turns to the goldest of oranges. Spread across this golden sunset are just wisps of rain that evaporate halfway before they hit the ground, and they just reflect all the oranges. And one night there, we saw the sunset shift from the goldest, sharpest orange to the softest of teals. It's really just something else, and it's beautiful. I can't remember a single moment when we weren't doing an eye at everything around us. The scenery was so captivating that I don't remember a moment when we weren't out the window taking pictures, looking at the rocks, telling each other to look at, this gigantic hill covered in orange light. I could sit here and describe it and try to talk about it for days, but it's the kind of thing that you truly need to go there and experience. When you're there and you're surrounded by these rocks and these colors, there's just such a sense of immense power, and you almost feel dwarfed by the land around you. And we can show you all the pictures, but it's a feeling that you really get when you're there in person. Inhabiting this land, this beautiful land, are some of the strongest, most determined people I have ever met. At one point in the week, our group split in two. Our half of the group went to an organic farm 13 miles from the Colorado border. The farm is run by a man named Bill Armino, who also goes by the name El Voluntario, which is Spanish for the volunteer. He goes by this title because he has devoted his entire life, the entirety of his life, to Tierra Amarilla, which is his home and his community. After fighting in his words, I'm going to interrupt myself for a second. When he was giving us a brief history of his land, he had to fight to get his family's land back for him and his community because it was taken by, in his words, the Anglo and the government. And when he was explaining to us, he kind of came to tears. And it's something that it was a very powerful moment, very hard to really understand what the backgrounds had come from. But he was able to get the land back for him and his community and his family. And he has devoted his entire life to farming this community. For a sustainable business, the sheep that live on this farm and roam between that farm and the mountains surrounding, we didn't see the sheep because they were in the nearby mountains, but they share the sheep in a local business, a wool shop that we stopped at, and the money just goes back to benefiting the same business and farm, creating a sustainable cycle. And the fact that he devoted his entire life to creating this farm and supporting his community is astonishing. Just decades ago, he developed the first clinic for this land. They had the first ambulance there just decades ago. He said he would make about $1 a day doing all this work for the community and his family. It's something that I think, coming from the background of a white male in suburban Philadelphia, I'll never really understand what it means to actually fight for land for my family. I don't want to sound like I'm exaggerating his work, but it's truly amazing to watch someone devote their entire life to a community, only to see how much it benefits the land and the people around them. The segue leads into what I think is an important and overarching aspect of our trip, just this sheer sense of amazement and captivation that kind of binds all our experiences and emotions from this trip together. It almost means like a self-recognition and understanding of who we are and our place in this world. I think that, it's kind of a sense, it's another thing, I can't really explain it. You just, when we're there and you see, and we're immersed with these people and their land, It's just an experience unlike any other. I think as we tend to go about our daily lives, we get jaded. I went back to work a few days after we got home from the trip, and I work in a 20x20 cinder block room that is devoid of any windows and stays at 58 degrees pretty consistently. Going from the vast, warm, beautiful expanse of New Mexico to a brick room with no windows is not the most pleasant transition. But it got me thinking. It was so happy and fulfilling to go into a hike into a beautiful canyon and to work with these people on their farms. Like living a life like this man, Belarmino El Voluntario, just devoting your entire life to a community and seeing how much that benefits the people around you is just, it's amazing. And after experiencing a slice of this fulfillment, it was so tempting for me to just drop everything to kind of, you know, forget about school loans, forget about college. It would be so easy to just volunteer on a farm and not worry about money and living, just work and watch it benefit the community around you. It would be so fulfilling. It got me thinking, too, about how we find happiness, what we do to fulfill our lives, and what we do to find satisfaction, why we do those things. Personally, I would love to go do that. I would love to go live on a farm and work in a community like that, and just see how the community flourishes. But I can't. I've entrenched myself with school loans, school, film school, working. Why did I choose this path? Did I think it could provide some sort of permanent sense of satisfaction? Why do we choose to lead the lives that we lead? Why do we get married and have kids and look for jobs to keep us happy when we can find so much fulfillment just working in a community and working on, you know, a farm, for example? Are we so caught up in seeking happiness and some sort of permanence that we haven't been able to find something that truly makes us happy? I don't have any answers to any of these questions. These are just things that I thought about on this trip and as we came back to our daily routines. I say this was the best trip yet because it's one thing to go to Montana and to beautiful places and do beautiful work and work with beautiful people, but it's one thing, it's something completely different to come back and really question life and what you do and how you find happiness. Just to clarify, I love life. I'm very happy. I'm very happy with my decisions to go to school. I love this community a lot. I love the experiences we share together. I love seeing everybody learn and grow and take in everything around us on these trips. And I wouldn't trade anything for it, not even the beautiful mountain farm as something as it is. It was a really powerful experience, and I'm so excited to see the generations to come share these same experiences, to go on trips like this. Thank you.
It's so comfortable to stand here before you, to look out and see familiar faces, the faces of those who journeyed with me on each mission trip before this, those who've heard our stories of work done in the past, people's lives that have been touched by good, and their siblings or parents, or even working to help support their families, a place to be children. These children are empowered, given the right to vote on what projects they undertake, what fundraising they do, and even what to pay Leona, who has several jobs to support her family. They have two plots of land. One has been transformed into a large garden. The other is empty, with hopes of building a kind of rec center for the children and teens. Leona began this community outreach on her own, recognizing a need in the youth she saw. The difference one person makes to these 20 or so children is incredible, a difference that, as her program grows, Leona will need help with. The kind of passion that drives Leona is what stands before you, staring back from the faces of the youth you love and support. But it is not word enough to describe these young adults. They are excellent, superb, the perfect example of what is to come, what our future brings, what they will bring to each of us and our world.
Clearly I'm not Darren Paul. Darren was supposed to be here this morning, and he just feels so sad. He is sick in bed. He called me around 10 p.m. last night saying there's just no way he can make it. He wanted to be here. He wrote a sermon about his experience, and we just regret we won't be able to hear his story. There's also several of our teenagers who aren't here with us. They're away at camp. They're on other vacations. But it was just a mesmerizing week, and we would all love to share all of New Mexico with you, and we will throughout the year. We've got an event in September, an event in October. Suffice it to say, there's a lot in store about New Mexico beyond just today. I'm going to retreat several years before New Mexico, and I'm going to ask for your indulgence and participation in an exercise. When I went to Seton Hall University, I guess 12, 13, 14 years ago, I don't know how long it is now, I started off as an accountant. Accounting major, which I can't believe. I can't even balance a budget properly without divination's help. And so I switched into the field of psychology, and it was so interesting. I had never really used it to a degree. It's just been my own personal satisfaction. It's helped me along the way. Nevertheless, an exercise always stood out in my mind, and one that seems appropriate as a benchmark to begin my little sermon this morning. I'm going to ask you to participate. This particular professor in the psychological class said he was going to read a series of 15 numbers. He asked for us all in this lecture hall to pay attention to each number, and he was going to ask us a series of questions afterwards. So I will recite the same 15 numbers to you and recite the same questions afterwards. Pay attention, thinking cap on. 3, 8, 4, 1, 1, 2, 5, 9, 7, 9, 3, 6, 7, 4, 9. Show of hands, who remembers the last number I said? Can we agree? What is the number? Show of hands, who remembers the first number I said? 3. Show of hands, who remembers the sixth number I said? Bruce Byer? No. 2. I could go on and ask what the eighth integer, the ninth integer would be. The point was of this exercise that our memory, obviously, especially as the numbers get longer in a trail, generally remembers the beginnings and the ends of things. The stuff in the middle that kind of gets us from point A to point C, D, E, F, or G often gets forgotten in the recesses of our memory. And often we do this in society at times, too. We remember the beginnings and how things end, and the stuff in between becomes the fodder for fanciful imagination or just regret that things were never completed the way that we thought. And in a sense, this exercise then articulates our entire work experience out in New Mexico. I was recently on a phone conversation with an astonishing buffoon, a colleague of mine from seminary, who believes that mission trips should only be about beginning and ending a project and seeing it completed completely. And anything that is done that doesn't actually put a whole house together and a roof on top and moves a family in is a waste of time. Do you agree with that? No. We did 4 or 5 different adventures during the week where we worked at a particular wildlife
also worked with Adobe Bricks. We made 42 bricks. The group before us made 41. Groups after us will be making more. The bricks now have to wait for 3 weeks on the ground before drying out, and then probably another year before they can be put into an establishment or a dwelling place. We never got to see the end nor the beginning, but we made 42 bricks that will go into the end, we hope. We also worked at various organic farms, as you've heard here testified. We did irrigation, drip irrigation, flood irrigation. We weeded, we planted seeds. Did we actually see the fruit and the vegetables that came from the vine to feed the families in need? No, we did not. Does that mean that everything we did was made null and void? No, it does not. Our work was like a step along the way, as Oscar Romero calls it. We are the middle integers in a long sequence of events. But without our integers, without our work, these events don't come to fruition. And it's often forgotten. Will we be able to go to New Mexico and identify the 42 Adobe bricks once they make their way into a house? Will we be able to say, yes, truly, that is the mountain lion den and that is the fence that we built? I don't think so. But we are part of a history here that is being established not just in the world, but specifically in New Mexico and around Ghost Ranch. And the work that we did was so inspiring. And it should teach us all about the work that we do in our daily lives. We often think about the starts of relationships, the ends of the relationships. We think about the beginnings of a business or the demise of a business. We think about the CEOs or the vision plan as looking 10 or 15 years ahead. And we often forget about how much of a cog in the wheel we are. Though it may be seemingly insignificant, everything we do is a step along the way. And I can think of no better prayer than Archbishop Oscar Romero's prayer to identify our time out there that will stay with us forever, and it should hopefully stay with you forever in everything that you do. No matter if you're at the beginning or at the end, everything you do in life has consequences, it has meanings, it affects things. Everything that we did that we didn't see, the fruit that came from the vine, that we never saw the mountain lion go into the den, that we didn't see the bricks actually go into the building, had meaning. And everything that you then have given to us has meaning. Unbelievable amounts of meaning. There was a hike that we went on called Box Canyon Hike. We hiked into the bedrock of this particular canyon. And the kids constantly made fun of me about this because I just harped on and on about all the dinosaur fossils that were found in this particular canyon and saying, we're a part of history. We're seeing the same places that dinosaurs vegetated. It's probably changed over several million years. But nevertheless, what was so impressive about that particular canyon to me is that it was a metaphor for our entire week. Indeed, it harkened back to the numbers. At the beginning of time, those canyons were formed and dinosaurs walked. People have hiked them, the Archuletas owned the ranch around them, and then we were a part, standing there, seeing the different layers in the bedrock, saying that's where a flood happened, that's where a fire happened, perhaps that's where a dinosaur reached his head and grabbed some other creature and ate him for his lunch. We were there as a part of history, a part of an ongoing history, and we are all part of an ongoing, unfolding history of the Lord's grace and good work. It is up to us, however, to make our mark in that history. And what are we doing with our time? We all are called to go on these type of trips, and if we can't go on these type of trips, to think in such a way that every little thing that we do matters for the glory and the kingdom of God. As Mark says in his parable of the sower, and his parable of the sower, by the way, is different than all the other Gospels' parables. It is not about the sower or the seed in Mark's parable, but it's about the earth. It's about a whole process and everyone coming together as one. Mark's gospel is always called the secret gospel, the secret of the messianic secret. In this case, the parable is called the secret of growth. And we can plant our seeds, we can scatter them around. As Mark says, we can even go to bed at night and wake in the morning, and we do not know what is going to yield. Tenfold, 30-fold, 0-fold. And going to a place like Ghost Ranch, where there is not just good soil for vegetation, but also good soil for our souls, we are able to be a part of that process, to scatter our seed, to do our work in Ghost Ranch, and yet it is Ghost Ranch that then inspires us to be better, to be somewhere. We can sing Kumbaya and read the Bible and have a wonderful week. Why do we go to New Mexico? Because we are following the parable of the sower as a mark. We are searching for good soil that's going to yield product, that's going to inspire us so that we can continue to do good work. You don't just throw your seed into the dry ground that doesn't do anything for us anymore. So we will continue to go to New Mexico. We will continue to go to other places where the soil is just reaching out for our harvesting hands and where the Lord's work can be done. But we can't do it without all of your support. So we thank you for your support. We thank you for your financial gifts, your spiritual prayers for our well-being. And we hope that you will continue to raise kids. I'm looking at Tommy Rebeck out there, looking at Anna Rebeck out there. I remember Emily Kaplanis' daughter out here, all the kids that will come back in September, that you will continue to support this program so that we can go out to all these places where the soil is rich for God's grace, and that we can bring home stories about